This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. My name is Patsy Gill. My guest today is Olivier Magny, the author of a delightful book called Stuff Parisians Like, Discovering the Quoi in the Je ne sais quoi. Hi, Olivier.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
Okay, nice to have you on the phone. Hold on one moment. We're going to play a little song for you.
That's for me. Bonjour, Paris. I want to wander through the Saint Honoré, do some window shopping in the Rue de la Paix.
Well, that song, of course, brings up Paris for us. And as Americans, we love Paris, and it's still, I think, like the number three destination, honeymoon destination. And I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Good enough, you know. My name is, the French way is Olivier Magny.
Olivier. Oh, see, we just love it. We love French accents. We're always a little bit nervous about using them, but it's wonderful. Now, you've been described as the cheeky sommelier with a bad haircut in some publications, and it's funny because a few years ago, most Americans really they weren't that aware of what a sommelier did. And I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but thanks to cooking shows here in the United States, we have so many nice cooking shows like Top Chef, and they've really brought the wine tasting to the forefront so that people realize how important wine tasting is and getting the right wine with the right food. So I know that's your expertise, and it was from that you started a blog, right?
Correct. Yeah, that's my being a sommelier and a wine expert, you could say. I guess it's my day job, and I started a wine tasting company in Paris a little over 10 years ago now.
Au Chateau?
The company is called Au Chateau, yeah.
Oh, yes.
And so we do daily wine classes in English, and then I said, I should start a blog for the company, for the website, something sort of cheeky and funny that helps people understand Paris better. And so I created the blog of Au Chateau. I called it Stuff Parisians Like. And, little by little, the blog grew more and more popular. People, for some reason, really started to like it, to follow it, they were emailing me, please write more, please write more, we love what you do. And, soon enough, it got turned into a book. It got turned into a book that's now published in English, in French, in Chinese, in German.
I know, it's so an absolute international bestseller. I've seen it many times in Publishers Weekly, how the sales have been terrific. Because I think what you've managed to do is, particularly for Americans, because there's a lot of discussion about the Parisian attitude towards Americans. But, for us, as I said, we dream about Paris. It's always the place we have to go. And so the Stuff Parisians Like that you've written is just, it's really delightful, and it's so witty. And I just tell us a little bit more about some of the, how you did the different sections of the book. Each one talks about a specific area.
Yeah, correct. Basically, the thing is, a lot of books that are written about Paris are not written by Parisians or by French people. So they're frequently written by, Anglos, be it Americans, Australians, who come to Paris. So I wanted to share something that was more of an insider's point of view, and so someone who had completely internalized the code but who could also sort of transcribe them and translate them for non-Parisians. So that's what I try to do in the book, and I really want the book to be fun and lighthearted and funny, so it's very easy to read. It's little chapters, little entries that are like 1, 2, 3 pages each on a specific theme. So it can be about, you know, jogging, about the use of a specific word, about wearing black, about wearing white socks, about a specific type of ice cream, about cherry tomatoes, things that are, you know, discrete landmarks of Parisian, of contemporary Parisian culture. That I try to share and explain and tell the readers how to avoid the infamous faux pas, basically, when they go to Paris.
Well, that's pretty hard because I think most Americans wear white socks with their sneakers. So, tell a little bit about the colors. It's fascinating how French people look at colors.
Yeah, one of the articles in the book is called "Thinking That Not Wearing White Socks Makes You a Better Person," and because there's an immediate stigma if in Paris a Parisian sees someone wearing white socks with anything but if you're going to work out, it's fine. Any other instance, it's terrible. So it's if you wear white socks with regular shoes, you'll be absolutely treated with scorn and mockery by Parisians. So it's just little things like this, which are very you have to know if you're interested in that. Other thing, for instance, is the how much Parisians love to wear black, you know. And there's all sorts of different approaches to the way you're gonna wear different sorts of clothes, but you gotta be aware that color is deemed very different than it may be typically in the U.S. So Parisians, in a way, are the kings and queens of underdressing these days. And so, you know, it's all these things that I try to share with the readers.
Well, you do, and you do it in the most amusing way. Tell me, one of the I've been to Paris dozens of times, and I've always been very fortunate. I've never had a bad incident in Paris. We always, my husband and I, were always really treated so well. And of course, they probably were laughing at us, but we didn't know it, so we didn't care. But we always had such wonderful treatment. But of course, in the days when I used to travel to Paris, my husband would wear a cowboy hat, and so
that would score some points.
Yes.
That would score some points.
Exactly. Wherever we would go. I mean, we walked into, you know, you walk into the Ritz Hotel. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you just try to walk into the Ritz Hotel, it's not easy. One doesn't just walk into the Ritz Hotel. But if you're wearing a cowboy hat, wow, they open the door for you.
there's that thing. And you know, the Parisians have a very... they have a very weird perception. Parisians ultimately are very self-loathing, contrary to what most people would imagine. So seeing someone who displays their origin with pride is very rare and therefore very endearing, because the Parisians always try to hide in a way their origin. But I'll tell you, my wife is also American, and she walks throughout Paris with a cowboy boots, and she's very proud, and she would not trade her cowboy boots for anything in the world. And at first, my Parisian friends were like, "Olivier, who are you dating? Who is that crazy person?" And now they've gotten used to it. But it was interesting to see all the conversations. People in Paris did not expect a girl to wear cowboy boots, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, but Parisians are... Well, they're snobby. I suppose that's what Americans think of them as, snobby. But they're not just, it's not an anti-American thing so much as, I mean, they're snobby against everyone. I mean, they're just as snobby for people who come from Po or from, you know, from someplace else, right?
Yeah. Americans have a sense that people in Paris or French in general are very anti-American. Is very untrue. There's this perception that I think is true, that in the U.S. you have a certain elite, a cultural elite, that loves France while the masses despise France for some reason. It's a bit the opposite when it comes to France, meaning you have a very tiny, stuck-up elite that, you know, usually doesn't know America very well and has a negative opinion of it. And then you have the general public that really likes America, even though they like to poke fun, you know, at the what the rest of the world also pokes fun at America for, you know, the whole overweight slash warmongering, blah, blah, blah. But besides this, I mean, what most Americans do not realize is that French people have been fed with American television, with American films, with American singers, with American clothing, with American technology. So people that are, you know, less than 40 years old are extremely Americanized. A very strong trend right now in Paris is this, to me, it's a New Yorkization of Paris. A lot of people are trying to be like New York, you know, so all the restaurants are like mimicking what's going on in New York and in Brooklyn. So Paris, in a way, is becoming a sub-New York in terms of the new things that are happening, which is very interesting and which completely contradicts the vision that many Americans have of Paris being very anti-American and Parisians despising the U.S. It's kind of the exact opposite these days.
I haven't been back to Paris for about 5 or 6 years. Are Parisians still smoking as much as they used to?
They smoke, I'll tell you, they smoke less and less because the government, as with everything, they raised taxes on cigarettes tremendously. So that has affected numbers. Now, I was reading recently an article saying that French people smoke twice as much as Americans. So you do encounter cigarettes much more. There's a lot of casual smoking in Paris, people that don't really smoke in the daytime, but at night, you know, with a glass of wine, you'll see a lot of cigarettes. Interestingly enough, and again, very counterintuitively enough, people amongst the younger generation, a vast majority of smokers are women. Young women smoke much more than young men in France, which is a pretty interesting phenomenon to observe.
And you know, it's funny when you talk about smoking and having a drink. I don't know, as a sommelier, do you like people to smoke when they're drinking a fine wine?
You know, I'm not one of these stuck-up sommeliers. I'm pretty laid back. I think wine is about having a good time, so whatever floats your boat, ultimately. From a technical standpoint, it's not optimal to be smoking. But it's one thing that's very funny, you know, when you're in Paris and you haven't been for a while. At night, you walk the streets, and there's always, like, little groups of people that are smoking, no matter, you know, rain or shine, or even if it's super hot or super cold, there's always people that are stepping outside of a restaurant, of a bar, of a cafe to be outside and smoke. And you can actually see that in high school. During the break in high school, you have, like, you know, 200 kids that come out and smoke, which is a pretty random sight for Americans. So for wine, smoking clearly not ideal, but I think it's all about pleasure. So, all good.
tell me, one of the things that you know, when people go to Paris, of course, Americans dress casually in Paris, mm-hmm. partly because they try to travel light, you know, lightly with not big suitcases. It's not the days of the when they used to take trunks and have changes of clothes. So do Parisians still? I know Parisians love jeans, but do they not like jeans on Americans?
No. I'd say the giveaway is regular clothes. You could say worn with sneakers. That screams American. Like when you have like white New Balance sneakers and your regular jeans and shirt, that is a giveaway. But overall, you know, as much as there's just something you can tell, you know. Sometimes I see people, they come to a shop and say, oh, you know, people, they can always see that we're American. How come? And the first thing I tell them is like, well, you're smiling. You know, if you're Parisian, you're not smiling. Like, you seem happy. That's extremely exotic. So that's the main thing. Rather than your clothes, it's just you seem happy. So clearly, you're not French.
that's true. You can go a long time in Paris before you see a French person smiling, except to their dogs. You know, you always see all these people. Well, you have all these dog places for dogs that, you know, we don't have. Well, they're getting more so here, but you really like have, you know, give your dogs a lot of. I don't know if they're still allowed in restaurants, but I remember when I was first there, the first time I ever actually saw a dog eating in a restaurant was in Paris. I had never seen that, you know, in America.
No, it's true. It is true. It's still something. Now, I'll tell you one thing that's interesting about Paris is that the sociology is changing at a very fast pace. I mean, I grew up in Paris, spent my whole life in Paris, and I'm 34 years old now. So, I've seen the city change at a tremendous pace, in a sense that when I grew up, Paris was a city like, I guess, most cities, and you could have a family and raise a family of two or three kids, and you could do fine. It's no longer the case, because now most of central Paris, the apartments are no longer inhabited by Parisians. They're rented out to tourists. You know, and so people are being pushed back, and Paris has gotten so incredibly expensive that most families are leaving or have left the city. And so you end up with a city that indeed starts to resemble more New York, which is becoming a city of tourists on the one hand and yuppies, you know, so people that are usually without any children, young professionals. If they have a child, they have maybe one. When they start having a second one, they take off, you know?
Yeah.
So the sociology is changing very, very fast, and that also affects the habits. So the cute little family with a little doggy, or those people are a dying species. They're still there. Will they be there in 20 years? We'll see.
You know, it's funny. Just 2 weeks ago, I was walking through Publix. You know, I'm here in Florida, in Clearwater, mm-hmm. Florida, and I was walking through Publix, and they were giving out free samples of this new ice cream. And I stopped, mm-hmm. and I said, what is it? And they said, salted caramel. And that reminded me of the story about, you know, how French approach sugar and sweets in general, and about the salted caramel. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's just, the French have a very, ultimately France is a, I guess one could say, formerly Catholic, but it's a Catholic culture. So there's a degree of guilt involved in a lot of things of daily life, and the relationship to desserts is one of them. So Paris has championed very specifically Parisian desserts, one of them being the what we call the café gourmand, which is like you order a coffee with like two or three mini desserts. So you're having dessert, but not really. You're sampling things. Hey, so you're like not going full on. Another example, would be the salted butter caramel, which is very, very big because it's an indulgence, but there's a saltiness. So you're still not fully committing to your sugar. You know, there's a degree of like back and forth, one step forward, one step backward. So it's always that relationship between pleasure and guilt. In France, is a very tight one. Much more, you know, a lot of Americans have this view of Parisians and French people always indulging and living the good life. Again, it's a bit of a misconception, especially amongst the Parisian women who tend to be very, let's say, they don't overeat.
That's for sure. Listen. You know, I have to take a little break for my sponsors, but I want to come back. So just hold on, and I want to talk about your other book, Into Wine, which is a fantastic book. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Are you looking for the perfect gift? Going to a wedding? A special birthday? The Silver Queen is the place to go. Graduations are coming up. Don't settle for the ordinary. At the Silver Queen, you will find a unique gift. Things that you won't find at the mall. From beautiful photo frames to silver and china, you will find just what you're looking for. One that says, you care. Guys, looking for that perfect ring? You'll find it at the Silver Queen. And don't forget their bridal registry. Located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo, the Silver Queen is the place to go. Visit their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. And when you go to the store, tell them that Patsy with a Z sent you.
Hi, it's Sawyer from the Dolphin Tale movies. Now is the perfect time to visit the world-famous Clearwater Marine Aquarium. Millions have seen us around the world, and now you can experience what we do in person. Come and reconnect with Winter and her fun-loving movie co-stars, Hope, Mavis, and yes, that crazy bird, Rufus. Immerse yourself into the world of marine life rescue with the behind-the-scenes tour. Explore the film sets, and don't miss our free boating adventure. Save time in line when you buy tickets at seawinter.com. Kids only $16.95.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge is all...
If you're in the market for your next car, then the place to shop is AutoShopper.com. You'll have access to hundreds of dealers right here in the area, and you can search over millions of cars nationwide on AutoShopper.com. AutoShopper.com is in hundreds of locations in the Tampa Bay area. Find your next car by taking advantage of all the power and reputation of AutoShopper.com. From your desktop, you can read car reviews, automotive news, calculate payments, use our tools to research, and get a Carfax vehicle history report at AutoShopper.com. This is the publication to pick up and read when you're looking to purchase your next car. Log on to AutoShopper.com and search for your special vehicle. And if you want to sell your vehicle, then advertise it in AutoShopper.com magazine. The readers can view a picture of your car and call you directly. It's all happening at AutoShopper.com, your auto buying and selling source. Pick up the magazine today or log on to AutoShopper.com, the premier source for car buying or selling. AutoShopper.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Oliver Magny. Hi, Oliver.
Hello, hello, Patsy.
Okay, let's talk about wine. You know, you are the founder of, I think, the greatest wine tasting bar in Paris, and you wrote a wonderful book, which is also you have a nice style. Into Wine is a book that it's not stuffy, it's not pompous, and it makes the whole story of wine interesting, and it's a book that's very easy to read. So tell us a little bit about your wine background. I know you know one of the things I do on this program is I try to encourage people to follow their dreams. If they want to write, then they should write. And you certainly followed your dream when you, because you were in business school, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And you wanted more out of life.
Yeah, basically, I mean, I was, and that's part of the French education system. I was, you know, you want to go through a good school, so you're basically going to end up, you know, engineering, business, or medical school. Anyway, I ended up in business. Didn't really want to do business. I did a few internships. I'm like, well, that's going to be a miserable life. I'm not going to be happy if I end up like these guys. So I'm like, well, you know, I like wine, so maybe I should pursue that. And I did, and it was completely chaotic for a number of years, and my mother was like, when are you getting a real job? When are you getting a real job? And, you know, I persisted, and I think there's a lot to be said for perseverance. and indeed following your dreams and your intuition. And now, yeah, Au Château has grown to become, I think it's really a cool place. If you like wine, you can learn about wine, you can taste. We have about 40 wines, by the way. It's a really awesome place. And any of your listeners who come to Paris, they should look up Au Château. So, I learned about this. I was about one. I was mostly self-trained. I took a number of classes, traveled to a number of vineyards, but I vastly taught myself, and it gave me a vision which is slightly, different from the vision of a lot of people. And to me, I was like, wine. People get all so stuffy, but wine is just wine. It's fermented grape juice. Everybody needs to relax. It doesn't need to be complicated. It doesn't need to be stuffy. It should just be fun. And when I look back at this decade of being, completely involved with wine, it's an itinerary that has changed my life tremendously. It has changed my understanding of a number of subjects. It has helped me grow more knowledgeable, and that's what I wanted to share. I wanted to write a book that would help people gain confidence with wine and grow more knowledgeable and help them pick the right wines for them, but also share about, when you look a bit into wine, what you actually can learn about the world we live in and how you can become a more educated, considerate,
Well, one of the things I know that you're interested in and that you write about is, I don't know, again, if I'm pronouncing this right, but it's terroir, right?
Terroir, perfect pronunciation.
Okay, great. Oh, from the master. That's a nice compliment. So tell us what that means. It really has a very full meaning of what, of sort of a, I don't know, I think I've heard it described as a somewhereness or something. It's an important word. Explain it.
Absolutely. Terroir, if you will, is the sense of place in a wine. It's that thing that when you taste the wine from California, it might be a Cabernet Sauvignon. Well, it will taste different from a Cabernet Sauvignon from Bordeaux. And it will taste different from a Cabernet Sauvignon from the Loire Valley. So each place has its own climate, its own soil, its own geology. And so the grapes grow in a particular environment that gives them a unique taste, and that taste can be passed on to the wine. So there's no understanding wine if you don't understand that notion of terroir. And what I try to explain in the book is that as much as people like to, oppose France versus California, Australia versus Italy, the split in the world of wine is actually not at all a split based on geography. It's a split based on culture and based on what you're going to do with your own terroir. Because terroir is a French word, but it's not a French thing. Terroirs exist all over the world. Every place has its own environment. Question is, do you want to express your terroir and to make a wine with more personality, with more uniqueness, with more of a soul? Or do you wish to conceal the terroir and to make a wine that's going to be a little more engineered and to meet the taste that are going to sell for the general public? So that's the real split, and that's why French wine may come across as very complicated, because we come from a culture of terroir lovers, where we like the diversity in the food, we like the diversity in the wine. And so the book is also an invitation to embrace that culture of terroir in the fact that we have this amazing world right now, which is completely open. You can travel, experience all these things. But the globalization that we should look forward to is that globalization of diversity. You go to a place, you taste different food, different habits, different culture, different music, rather than, you go to a place and you have the same Starbucks, the same H&M, the same McDonald's, the same, chain stuff everywhere. And so that it's us as consumers who can make that difference. So we should look forward and we should seek more terroir in our life. And that's one of the things that wine taught me. That's one of the things that I shared in my book, Into Wine.
Which you did so well, because you didn't use... you don't use a lot of that jargon, that sort of puts people off. You describe it so beautifully.
There's no need. My day job is to teach about wine. I've been teaching. So, and I've done I've sat in a number of wine classes, and I've almost fallen asleep a number of them because like, this is so boring. And how wine should not be boring. Wine should be exciting. It should be fun. It should make you want to engage. So that's the style I have at Au Chateau, and that's also the style I try to have in the book. And so I'm glad that you thought so and that you had a good time reading the book. That makes me very happy.
Well, I think everyone should... It's a book that's going to stay in fashion because it is so, it really so nicely written and so easy to read, and which is important because I would like to know what wine to use sometimes with certain foods, but you know I'm not sure, and I think to have a book that you know talks nice you know easily about wine and describes different types of wines is really very very helpful. It's sort of it's very much like your stuff Parisians like is that we like to read something that's not you know that's easy to understand and that really gets to the point without a lot of you know fluff and stuff that we don't need.
Well, thank you very much. And what I try to do in the book is also give the reader the keys to understand. It's not like if you just pass on information, people are going to forget. If you help them acquire the understanding of the mechanisms, then they can, you know, understand how it works, and so it becomes much easier to pick one and to know how things work. So that's what I try to do. Just one little remark, because some of your readers are interested in writing.
Yes.
I'll tell you, for Into Wine is indeed, I try to make it as easy a book, as easy a read as possible. It took me 5 years to write that book. I've rewritten it literally probably a dozen times because I wanted to find that flow. I wanted to find the structure and the tone of voice that makes it super easy, you know, and that makes a pretty vast and deep and dense subject really super approachable and very obvious. And I think at some point I found that, I'm like, okay, now the book is ready, you know. But it took a whole lot of work to get to that point of making the whole thing an easy read. So I'm just for those of your listeners who are in the process of writing. I mean, you gotta keep working on your manuscript until you're happy and until you reach the result you're happy
with. It takes a lot of effort to look effortless. That's the key.
That is true, and especially in the case of this book, because I talk about wine, but I talk about a number of other things. I talk about the soil, I talk about the environment, I talk about the food we eat. So it covers a whole lot of subjects. You want to be very precise, very factual, yet analytical, and yet funny at the same time. So it's a whole lot. But yeah, it was a great challenge to write that book, and he got awarded like a best wine book award last year. So it's a tremendous honor.
And actually, for writers, it is also a great reference book because you know when we're writing about a character or something, and we're writing about wine, it's a great reference book. So I highly recommend it to every writer to get.
Thank you.
Now, you're in America right now.
I am.
And are you on your way back to Paris soon?
Soon. My wife is in the is American, so we sort of split our time between Paris and the U.S., which is very exciting, and which is one of the ways for me to also have a keen eye on my fellow Parisians, because when you go back and forth, the differences appear much much clearer. So that's why I'm working actually on the next book, which is going to be a book about French people in general, and this I guess this new France, the France that has changed tremendously over the past 20 years, and again, just like I did for Parisians, try to give readers you know a sense of well again keys to understand that new France. Which is no longer the France of Josephine Baker and Jean-Paul Sartre. It's a new France.
Yes.
And so that is still part of the culture, part of the history, but there's there's new stuff going on, which I'm going to try to bring the readers up to speed with.
Do you still do wine tasting yourself at the, you know, do you do some of the, give some of the?
Yes, ma'am. No, every time I'm there, I spend 20 hours a day at Au Chateau running wine tastings, being behind the bar and, you know, chatting with clients and having a good time with them and sharing my passion. It's what I love to do. So no, absolutely. Whenever I'm in Paris, people can find me.
Okay, because I know you have to make reservations for your wine tasting events. So
it's best to make reservations. But we have tastings every day, so it's you should be able to accommodate everyone.
Oh, that's fantastic. And really, anybody who is on their way to Paris, they should look up the website. It's a very nice website. It tells you everything you need to know about Au Chateau, and I'm sure...
The website is au-chateau.com.
Yes, au-chateau.com. It's a beautiful website, and it has all about the wine tasting, and you also have a restaurant.
A day trip to Champagne, and have a restaurant, and it's a cool place. If you like wine, it's a cool place.
it's a great place, and I hope that my listeners will come and see you, and
I hope you will come too.
Well, sure. I'm definitely going to come and see. I'm planning that trip because I really would love to see you and to look forward to your next book. And as soon as that comes out, you have to come back on the show and tell us about it so we can promote it and get people reading it. I know that it's going to be as interesting as the other two. I love your style. As I said, it's just perfect, and I hope everyone. I would suggest to everyone, if they're on their way to Paris, they should really, get your books and definitely make a reservation to go to Au Chateau. So I want to.
Well, that's extremely kind.
Oh, my pleasure, and I want to thank you so much for joining me today, and. Invite you back.
Well, thank you very much. It was a real pleasure. And if you or any of your clients have any questions about Paris or about wine, people can look me up online. Happy to help with anything I can.
Okay. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Me too. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Okay. Au revoir.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Au revoir.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Mother's Day is just around the corner. It's time to visit the Silver Queen, the premier location in the Tampa Bay area for gifts for all occasions. At the Silver Queen, you'll find the perfect gift for the queen in your life. From elegant earrings and jewelry bags to whatever mother loves. Beautiful photo frames that you won't find in the mall. So stop by the Silver Queen, located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. Is there a wedding in your future? Then the Silver Queen is the place to go. They have an amazing selection of engagement and wedding rings, and their bridal registry will ensure that you receive gifts that you will treasure for a lifetime. How about a birthday? You must check out their musical Silver Plate Birthday Cupcake. It is the kind of gift that will be used year after year. It's just $40. It is the perfect gift for a baby's first birthday. Check out their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. Remember, the Silver Queen, 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. It is the store with the beautiful dome.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Far Arrgh, matey. When it's time for lunch, when it's time for dinner, when the show's over, when the day's over, when it's time to chill, where do we go? Over to Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub. It's literally in our backyard, right in back of the WTAN studios at 700 Eldridge Street, just north of downtown Clearwater. Just look for the broadcast tower. Nancy's food and atmosphere get rave reviews. The laid-back patio is a great place to hang out, dine, and listen to live music at night. And Nancy's one of the friendliest proprietors in town. And now, Nancy is serving Sunday Jazz Brunch from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Brunch served with Eggs Benedict, crepes, waffles, lox and bagels, shrimp, oysters, and a build-your-own omelet. That's all at Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub, 700 Eldridge Street in Clearwater. That's right where Eldridge crosses the Pinellas Trail between Myrtle and Fort Harrison. Call 446-3717. 446-3717. You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome back to Joy on Paper. I want to play another song for you that I thought about when I was talking to Olivier. Here is the opening song. As a writer, I always feel sad that so often the words that were written as an introduction to this song are rarely sung. You know, I'd like to think of Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein sitting around a piano and coming up with those words. They must have been so thrilled when they wrote those words, "A lady known as Paris, romantic and charming." That's what happens sometimes to writers. Their words are forgotten, but that's why I wanted to play this song, just to remind you that there were words often to some of our most popular songs. The composers and the lyricist wanted to conjure up an image. And that song, of course, is one that conjures up for us an image of Paris that we all imagine and that we enjoy seeing in films. So it's something, if you're going to Paris this year, think about it and make sure that when you go, you look up Au Chateau. It's a wonderful wine tasting bar and just an experience to walk into the doors and to see all the bottles of wine and to meet all of the different sommeliers there who will tell you about wine. Now, this song was sung by Kate Smith in the 1940s, and it was a remarkable song in that she was given the right to be the solo performance of that song for 6 weeks so that she could get all the money from this, the release of this song, because Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein admired her so much. Also, if you're in Paris, think of staying in a hotel that has some history. There are so many hotels in Paris where different writers have lived or stayed, and one of them is the Hotel du Mont Blanc, which is a very nice hotel, and you can look, go to the different websites and look up hotels where writers have stayed. The Hotel Mont Blanc is near Notre Dame, and it's a beautiful hotel and a fun place to stay, and a place that when you know, it's always nice to stay in a hotel that you can then talk about and say, well, I stayed. You might actually stay in the room that that Hemingway stayed. So it's very exciting to go in Paris and try to find one of the smaller hotels, one of the old hotels that, you know, they might not have as much as, you know, the same kind of service as we expect sometimes. But it's wonderful to walk up sort of creaky stairs or to find a room that overlooks a garden or the rooftops of Paris. And so really think about when you go to Paris of looking for something unusual. Now, before I continue, I have a few messages I've gotten from listeners who have been asking. Last week I had David Ellis, an entertainment lawyer here in Clearwater, and so I had some legal questions that came in, and also some other questions about writing. And one of the questions I received is from Tracy. And Tracy, I know I met you at the Romance Writers Conference, and she just wants to know if, when you do a query letter, if you should write it in the first or third person. Now, it would be very unusual to write a bio in the third person. On the other hand, I wouldn't say don't do it. If it's really well written, it might be just the thing to catch the attention of an agent. You know, it's difficult to know what an agent will like, and you have to try different things. One thing you should know is never, if you've sent to one agent in an agency, that's it. Don't send to another agent in that same agency, because they do. They have conferences every week where they sit down and they have a pile of query letters, and they go through them together sometimes. So they'll say, oh, I think this one's interesting, but it's a subject I don't cover. So you might write a young adult fiction, and that particular agent might be sort of off of young adult fiction, although maybe she had in the past done that type of work. So, but she'll give it to somebody else. So they change. You know, it's just like anybody. You get in a job, you don't want to get stuck and sort of in a rut and do the same thing over and over. So somebody who's doing romance today, and you see their name, you look it up on a web page, and you find out that she's done romance, well, she might not be doing romance now. And when she gets your query letter, she might have moved on to nonfiction. But if it's a good query letter, she will still say, okay, she will pass it on to another agent within their agency. So never send duplicate letters to within the same agency. And Alex sent me a question, and he wants to know something. It's, you know, when they're talking about genres, this is important. In a query letter, you have to say, you know, you have to say, this is an 80,000 word something, some kind of, you have to say it's a romantic fiction, or a 90,000 word historical romance, whatever. You have to give. They want you to say that right in the beginning of the letter. And so he wants to know, Alex wants to know, is regular fantasy different from dark fantasy? And should he say it's dark fantasy? Because he's not sure if it is dark fantasy, what he wrote. Well, I can tell him. Dark fantasy would have have a element of horror within it. So it's when you're talking about sort of these subgenres, it's difficult sometimes to say. But an example, you know, someone pointed out is in The Sandman, written by an author named Neil Gaiman. And what makes that it's a fantasy based work, but it would definitely be considered a dark fantasy because you have a villain who eats eyeballs. So that is, you know, like as pretty dark as you want to get. So if it's a dark fantasy, say it up front, because you don't want to say, well, this is a fantasy, and then, you know, somebody, an agent picks up the thing, your submission, and expects something, you know, with little princess fairies dancing around a tree or something. So it's, you have to sort of be straight and upfront with in your query letter. I've had during the past few weeks, I've had some agents on, and they will all tell you, try to get your work professionally edited before you submit it. And that's about it for the questions. If you have questions, please send me an email. It's patsy.radio@gmail.com. And or you can go to my webpage, the radio webpage. It's radio-joyonpaper.com, and there's a submission form there. So you can submit your question, and I will answer it next time. In a few weeks, my guest will be Matthew Palmer, the author of Secrets of State. And as a 20-year veteran of the U.S. Foreign Service, Mr. Palmer has written an exciting international intrigue story, and I'm sure that you'll all enjoy it. So, and enjoy the interview. So I will put that up on my Facebook page. This is Patsy with a Z, wishing you a great week. Go to my webpage, joyonpaper.com, and remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage. So this week, get motivated, take some time to write, and maybe read Olivier's book about wine, and get yourself a nice glass of wine, and sit down and start writing. And as you saw, he turned his blog into an international bestseller. So you can write. All you have to do is put one word after another, and in a few weeks, you will have your first chapter. So join me next week on Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. Have a great week.